This is Night Call. Broadcast live with host Russ Gibb and tonight's guest, Reverend Michael Zick of North Miami Beach, Florida. Tonight's subject, what can I do to help Cuban refugees? You participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Now here's Night Call host, Russ Gibb.
Hello, Night People. This is Gibb. Standing by in Miami, Florida is Reverend Michael Sick, director of the Church World Service, the Miami office. Now, Mr. Sick was born in Cuba of Russian parents and has spent the last 5 years of his life aiding refugees in Chicago and Miami. If you'd like to ask a question or make a comment on tonight's topic, what can I do to help Cuban refugees, give us a call here at Night Call. Now, our Night Call number is area code 313-846-6601. Now remember, you may call from anywhere collect. Please make the call station to station. Our Night Call number is area code 313-846-6601. Our operators are on duty, our lines are open, and we invite you to join us here on Night Call. Our guest tonight, Mr. Michael Sick, and our topic, what can I do to help Cuban refugees? Mr. Sick, why is Castro allowing the refugees out of Cuba?
Well, one of the reasons is, and the primary reason, is their discontent with his regime. For quite some time now, refugees have been coming out, as you remember, and most people know across the country. Refugees have been coming out of Cuba since 1959, when they realized that the regime, government was being taken over by communism. They became dissatisfied. First of all, the first waves were the upper class of refugees, and then more and more we could see people from all walks of life that were discontent with the regime and the fact that the government and the change that the revolution had brought about was being infiltrated by communist rule.
How many Cubans will come to America?
At this time, you remember, October 3rd, President Johnson made a statement as he signed the new immigration bill, stating that anyone who was seeking refuge in this country from any type of oppression would find it. And he said that he was opening the possibility for the reuniting of the families that had been broken when children were sent to the United States. This was mostly prior to October 1962. He wanted to see these parents of the children that were in the United States reunited with their families. Secondly, he wanted to see the spouses of persons that were in Cuba or here united in the same manner. And then he also opened the opportunity and the possibility for prisoners that were in prison in Cuba that were not in favor with the regime to enter this country. And then generally anyone that wanted to seek freedom in this country. At this time, the situation is as follows. This week, we began processing refugees in the first three flights that brought in 85, 90, and 95 refugees from Varadero.
And whereabout is that?
This is in the northern part of Cuba, about 75 miles from Havana, a new place. It's a resort, and an airport has been prepared there. Being used for this airlift.
It's a refugee center in Cuba, then.
That's right. That is bringing in refugees, and will bring in refugees at the rate of 35 to 4,000 per month.
What's the background of the average refugee from Cuba?
We have noticed that in this group, as in the past, they're coming from all walks of life. However, there is one distinction as we look at the total group, and that is that young men in the ages between 14 and 26 are not allowed to leave because this is the age of military service, and this is the group that is lacking in the group, and they come from all walks of life. We notice that there was a proportionate percentage of older persons and also of young to the baby in arms.
Well, now, why do they come?
These people have stated, and all of them give the same rule, it's impossible to live under a communist rule, under a system that does not allow the freedoms and the gaieties, we could say, that the Cuban people have been accustomed in the past.
Well, why do they flee their country and not attempt to stay and change the Castro regime?
Well, basically, Russ, I would say that this is because of the fact that the regime has taken such a hold with the more up-to-date weapons supplied by the Russians and the Chinese, making it actually quite hard for any activity to take place. There have been known attempts at uprising, but because of the fact that there is such close surveillance in a communist system, it's almost impossible for people that are not allowed any weapons to be able to do anything about it.
So actually, they're under a military dictatorship.
Exactly. And knowing the situation as it has been in the past in other places where this type of rule has been imposed, it has been it is almost an impossibility.
Do you feel that the Cuban that is coming, however, is still the skilled Cuban or the professional Cuban? What about the Cuban farmer? Is he making any attempts to leave the country?
Well, yes. We noticed, for example, that before these three flights that came in this week, there was a sea lift that brought in a little over 2,000 refugees from those that had assembled at the port of Camarillo, also on the northern coast, close to the place where they're coming from now. And we noticed that from this group, since it is a larger group than the one we have seen so far this week, since, as you know, we have seen only three flights, there were those that came from the rural areas. It's hard to determine from only three flights that don't number quite 200, slightly over, that there have been very many of the lower or large proportion of the rural people. But I'm sure as time goes on, we'll be able to see this, a total proportion of people from the rural areas. This has also always been the case. Most people have thought that, well, only the moneyed class or the upper class or middle class even would be the ones to want to leave, but this has not been the case. For example, we have seen in studies that have been made that there has been also a good proportion of the rural and less skilled classes, including the Cuban Negro. There have been a number of Negroes also willing to leave. This is one of the statements that have been made by the regime, is the fact that the Negro is oppressed, which is not quite true.
Okay. He's oppressed where? In Cuba or in the United States?
In Cuba before the regime took over.
I see.
Before this revolution. However, the fact that Negroes, also from all walks of life, the professional and the other, have come out, that the fact that this is not true.
We're talking tonight to Mr. Michael Sick, and he is a gentleman who is working with the Cuban refugees in the United States and presently in Miami. Our night call number is area code 313-846-6601. Our topic, what can I do to help Cuban refugees? If you'd like to join us here on night call, give us a buzz at area code 313
646-6601. Mr. Sick, I have a caller standing by in Denver, Colorado now, a listener on KTLN, Mr. Jerry Donovick. Good evening, Jerry. Speak right up, sir. You're on night call.
All right, hello.
Your comment, please.
Can you hear me, please?
Yes, sir.
I think one of my comments has been answered already, at least somewhat, and that is, why, if the people are oppressed and displeased with Castro, they don't handle it themselves. I don't feel, however, that there has been enough done in that direction, but maybe they know best what to do. But another comment, why should the United States absorb somewhat like 48,000 people a year, Cubans, who are unhappy with the regime in Cuba, when there's a strict quota on immigrants from other countries?
Mike, what do you think about that?
Well, Mr. Donovick, as you know, there has been a new immigration bill passed and some restrictions, other liberalities in relation to immigration. As I said before, I don't know if you were listening then or not, President Johnson made the statement that those fleeing oppression would find it. Remember some years ago, this same offer was given to Hungarian refugees, and in this category, the restrictions of quota does not seem to come in. These are, of course, decisions made in high levels of immigration, State Department, and so forth, that, of course, where, as far as I'm concerned, where I sit, I have no jurisdiction, but this country, through its past history, has been a haven for the oppressed. For example, during or right after the Second World War, there was the Displaced Persons Act during the administration of Mr. Truman. And this was also true that a mandate, shall we say, was issued for the country to open its arms to a group of people that have been displaced. And this has been in the tradition of this country. And this is one more instance of this taking place. When we say that the United States, or part of your question, say that the United States is called upon, let's say, to absorb this number of people, actually, we have seen so far in the influx of actually thousands in the past, that the United States has not really suffered for it. For example, we know that there is a shortage of doctors in the United States, for example. And there have been thousands of doctors and other technicians. At the same time, there have been people, especially in the first influx of the upper classes that came to this country with their own funds and established industries, for example, the sugar industry in Florida, and so forth. There's much to say for the fact that that Cuban refugees have aided the economy of this area. As you know, the Dade County, the Miami area, being primarily a tourist trade town, you could come here during the summer and nothing was happening.
So it's not all bad, we're really saying.
That's right.
I have one other brief question that
yes.
I made.
Yes.
He spoke of bringing Negroes in, or some Negroes were coming in, and although this is kind of a loaded question, why bring in Negroes when our own are having a bad time of it?
Well, the percentage of the Negroes has not been tremendously large. Actually, Cuba, in comparison to other Latin American countries, has a high percentage of, let's say, of the Caucasian. Over against, for example, the percentage you would find in Puerto Rico. Here too, in the Negroes, for example, a number of the Negroes that I have talked to that have come in, and this is, as I said, a small percentage. I don't think that when I mentioned the Negro was mainly to illustrate the fact that the Negro is not the one that is in the vanguard of supporting the revolution, but that he too has been willing and wanting to leave. The percentage, for example, of Negroes coming in is less than 4% from the total that have come in, and this, I would say, even is rather an ambitious figure, let's say.
Mr. Donovick, we have to break the stations now, and I want to thank you for calling Night Call.
Thank you for your answer.
Good night, sir. Mr. Jerry Donovick, a gentleman from Denver, Colorado, listening on KTLN radio. Our guest tonight is Mr. Michael Sykes.
Our topic, what can I do to help Cuban refugees? You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Look, I'm quite self-sufficient. I made myself what I am, thank you.
But don't you think all of us occasionally could use a little divine or...
Gee, I gotta run. Here's my card, anyhow. I'm a vice president now.
Well, good.
Yes, indeed.
But your name, it's just penciled in here.
Well, there's a big turnover in personnel. You know how it is.
Uh-huh. Well, that's just about how it is in life, isn't it?
Pardon?
We're all just penciled in.
And where you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by the United Presbyterian Church. This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
What can I do to help Cuban refugees? That's our topic on Night Call tonight, and our guest is Mr. Michael Sick, and he is a gentleman who has been working with the refugees for the last 5 years in Chicago and Miami. Now, if you'd like to ask Mr. Sick a question on tonight's topic or make a comment, give us a buzz here at Night Call. Now, you may dial us direct at area code 313-846-6601. Now, if you wish, you may make that call collect. You may reverse the charges. Our Night Call lines are open, and we invite you to join us here on Night Call. Area code 313-846-6601. What do you think about the Cuban refugees? Do you think we should allow them into this country? Are they going to be taking jobs away from Americans? These are questions that maybe you want to ask Mr. Sick. Mr. Sick, we have a caller standing by in Denver, Colorado now, a listener on KTLN, Mrs. Catherine Frank. Good evening, Mrs. Frank. You're on Night Call. Your comment, please, ma'am.
Yes, good evening. I'm listening to KTLN, and this is the subject here. I admire the Cuban people who are leaving their country and trying to make a better life for themselves and get away from communism. And I would like to know what we as an individual, the family, can do to help these people.
Well, Mike, there's a good question for you.
Ma'am, one of the first things I think that that we would like to see, and when I say we, I think I'm speaking for the total program and all agencies involved, and that is that we would like the public to be completely informed as much as possible in reading the press, or even if they like, if they want to find out, writing to the public relations office at the Cuban Refugee Center in Miami, Florida, and finding the actual facts as to the total program and what the United States as a whole, the government and voluntary agencies are doing. At this point, for example, those areas where we are working as one of the voluntary agencies, we would like to see the people in the local areas when they're called upon to sponsor a Cuban refugee to do all they can to aid them in finding employment and so forth. At this point, the refugees that are coming in now, and when I say now, I mean the first three flights in the airlift that started December 1st, we find that most of these refugees are going to relatives that have claimed them, and most of these refugees are resettling. In fact, the last flight that we had today that we processed and finished processing at 8 o'clock this evening, all went to relatives and friends.
They're not all going to Miami, then?
No, no. You see, the process right now is done in this way. The refugees, as they come in, right at the International Miami Airport, are bused to the Immigration and Customs and Refugee Reception Center, where the resettlement agencies have offices. There, after they go through the total process of being admitted into this country, contact is made by telephone with relatives outside of the Miami area. They are being kept in a specially prepared hotel for them, close also to the area, and they're placed on planes hours after that, and they go to unite relatives.
Now, who pays for this?
The United States government.
Mrs. Frank?
Now, I understand that they have Cubans that are coming in to Denver.
That's right. There will be those, I'm sure, I can't recall right off of how many or if any actually have gone, but I think some already have gone to Denver. These that have gone, as I said before, have gone to unite with relatives that have claimed them before. Before this program was initiated or started, relatives across the country were told to send in the prescribed forms if they had relatives in Cuba. And this was prepared, all these names were placed in a list, and these are the lists that are being used with the priorities as follows. First of all, the parents of unaccompanied minors that were in this country. Secondly, broken homes when a spouse was here and the other in Cuba. Particularly, we were concerned here with the women that were here with small children and husbands in Cuba. And there have been emotional reunions already along these lines where spouses have been separated for years, some children in Cuba and some here. For example, yesterday, a mother and a little girl, 4 years old, that came to unite with a father that had come in 4 years before, and this young man didn't know his daughter. And on, it has gone, and I'm sure will go. But basically, these priorities are the ones that are included in these lists.
One of the things that I would really like to know is, as an individual, as a housewife, how can we really help? Who could we contact if we could try to get someone to sponsor a man and his wife, somebody and a child? Who should we contact that we may be able to help maybe one family?
Yes, the shortest way, and it may sound to you like a roundabout way, but it really isn't, is there are four voluntary agencies working in the Cuban program. For example, I personally am the director of the Protestant or Church World Service. Then there's National Catholic Welfare Conference, the agency of the Roman Catholic Church. There's International Rescue Committee, IRC for short, and also HIAS, Hebrew Immigrant Aid Services, that handle the Hebrew refugees. The best and shortest way to make an offer would be to contact whatever group you are most interested in working with. If you're a Roman Catholic, contact your local priest. If you're a Protestant, contact your local pastor. From there, through denominational channels, you make a contact with your own denomination and on down to where we are with the offer.
Now, there's another thing I would like to ask you. For instance, now, of course, we realize that these people are coming in from a communist country. How do they screen these people to find out, the refugees, to find out whether or not they are communist or whether they are people that are really trying to get away from the communists?
Yes, well, as you may have heard in press, and of course our papers here have much more than papers across the country, as I have noticed in traveling. Before all this started, as I mentioned before, relatives here in the United States were requested to fill out forms if they they had relatives in Cuba that they wished to see enter this country. This was the initial step, and from this, a list was prepared. To make it, to answer your question as briefly as possible, INS or Immigration Service personnel will be going down and have been going down with each flight. There is quite a bit known in terms of activity in Cuba and who is with the regime and so forth. It seems evident by the State Department. These people are very, very carefully processed. For example, the lists that are prepared, Immigration Service personnel go down with each flight and they review every list and review, interview every individual before they're brought here. Then here, of course, they go through the whole process of immigration, fingerprinting and checking and so forth, which is actually the longest process. And I would say that they are quite well screened before they're allowed to come in. And I would say I don't think that everyone that wants to leave Cuba will be able to leave, because there may be something in his past record that is known to the authorities of the United States. As I said before, here I'm speaking, although I'm in the program, as a layman, because I'm not involved directly in that part of the program.
Mrs. Frank, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
It's a theoretical question. Say that there was a communist family that needed aid. Would you help them?
Well, I will answer you in one form. I'm very definite against communism. That's the very main reason I did call in, was to see how we could help people that were also against communism. Now, if this person was a confirmed communism, they definitely, I help them. Of course not. We kill them. I mean, how can you possibly do this when you have your husbands and your sons fighting these people? They are fighting for our lives in the United States of America, as far as I'm concerned. I have a husband in the military. I have a son going in right away. And I feel that I'm fighting for one thing. I'm fighting for the security of our country in any way that I possibly could do this. Of course, not with a gun. But I am fighting any way that I can think of possibly to help clean this up. I am happy and would go way out to help anyone that was trying to escape such as that. And this is the point of wanting to really sponsor someone, because going through organizations, and you can get a lot of help here to sponsor and help this person that are persons that are under the regime of the communists. I have been in the communist countries. I have seen in the communist countries what can happen. You can lose your life, first of all. You can lose your dignity. You can lose your sense of breathing, your sense of realism, your sense of life and living as a human being. And I, as an American, I feel that all of us, you and myself, everyone, should be proud to live in a free country. I feel that we should not be dominated by a crew of cutthroats. I very, very, very much believe this way. No, I would not, never help a communist. The only way I could help them would be turn them in. And if we did have enough laws to protect us from these people, I do think that we could come out from under this. Now, we'll go back into freedom of speech. We'll go back into freedom of a lot of things. But this is wonderful. This is very wonderful that we can go into our courts, into our Supreme Court, and we can go into a lot of places, and we can be a communist, or we can be a fine American, and we are still going to end up squirming around this thing.
Well, Mrs. Frank, I want to thank you for your opinion, and thank you for your comments.
Thank you very kindly.
Good night. Mrs. Catherine Frank, a lady who believes that communism is an evil, and said that she probably would not help a confirmed communist, even if he were in need. She was listening on KTLN in Denver, Colorado. Our guest tonight is Mr. Michael Sick.
And our topic, what can I do to help Cuban refugees? You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601.
host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Well, I can't this Sunday. I'm playing golf, and the following Sunday I promise to take the kids to the beach.
Uh-huh.
Man's got to spend some time with his kids, you know.
Yeah, sure.
Besides, we seem to get along just fine without church. You know, it's up to the individual. Gee, look at the time. I got to run. But anyhow, we'll trot along to church one of these days.
Uh-huh. Well, how about 2 weeks from Sunday?
Oh, I never planned that far ahead. 2 weeks, the whole world could blow up by then.
That's right.
Where'd you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by your Council of Churches. This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
Hello again, gentle people. Our guest tonight is Mr. Michael Sick, and he is a gentleman who is working with Cuban refugees. Refugees that are coming into Miami right now, right at this very time. And if you'd like to make a comment about tonight's topic, what can I do to help Cuban refugees, or express your opinion on the refugee situation, give us a buzz here at Night Call. Now, it's very easy to call us. All you have to do is dial area code 313-846-6601. Now, remember, you may call from anywhere collect. You may reverse the charges. Now, if you do call us, please make that call station to station. Our number, area code 313-846-6601. Our lines are open on Night Call, and we invite you to join us and express your opinion on the Cuban refugee situation in the United States. Area code 313-846-6601. Mr. Sick, I have a guest standing by, a caller standing by in Indianapolis, Indiana, listener on WFBM, Mr. Tim Hotstatter. Good evening, Tim. Speak right up. You're on Night Call.
Hello.
Yes, sir. Your comment, please.
I have a question.
Okay.
First of all, I want to make it clear that I'm not opposed to the Cubans coming into this country. But what I am curious about is if any are... or whether or not they're going to South America or other places like that also.
Mr. Sick?
Yes, there have been a number of refugees that have gone to South American countries. However, those that have gone in, most of them have gone to these countries after coming here to the United States of one group. Then there have been others that have gone directly. Lately, I have not heard of any that have gone to other South American countries, for the simple reason is that most Latin American countries, or all outside of Mexico, have cut off or shut off diplomatic relations, severed diplomatic relations with the government, the regime of Cuba.
Of course, we have shut off our diplomatic relations.
I was going to add that although we also have no diplomatic relations with Cuba, this agreement that is in effect now for 3 days, for three flights, and previously with a few that came in by sea lift or by boat, is being handled by the Swiss embassy. And this, I would say, impedes the fact that there would be more that would be going into other Latin American countries.
Tim?
Well, I was going to ask also, don't you think that perhaps it would be much better if for international relationships and the betterment of the world, so to speak, if they were put in South America where they have closer cultural and language ties, and because of what the Mr. Sick mentioned earlier, because of some of the abilities such as medicine and things like that, they could really help these people out a lot more than in this country?
Well, for one thing, for example, this influx and the opening of the doors of this country by President Johnson on October 3rd, when he stated that anyone seeking refuge from oppression in this country would find it, was made by our president speaking for the United States. We cannot speak for the Latin American countries. Although I would venture to say the invitation is open for those that wish to absorb and bring in some of these folks that might help them, as you mentioned yourself, in terms of their services and their profession. This has to be undertaken by each individual Latin American country. And we cannot, say, force, and although it has been suggested that this be done by other countries, as I said, we cannot force other countries to accept refugees. This is something we're doing as a nation.
I see. Well, are they going to Puerto Rico and places where there are a lot of Puerto Ricans?
Yes, a good number of Cubans have gone to Puerto Rico, and actually, because of the fact that among the Cubans there have been good percentages, although the percentages across the line in terms of profession and trade and skills and so forth, the economy of Puerto Rico has been bolstered by the fact that a number of good businessmen and professional people have entered their scene, and this, in general, I would say, to be brief, has been tremendously helpful to Puerto Rico. The fact that a good number of Cubans have gone and still are going into Puerto Rico.
Tim, can I ask you a question?
Yes, sir.
Do you think that all the Cubans coming into the United States are causing a problem possibly for those Americans that are presently unemployed?
I don't think so.
You think our economy?
As long as there's no discrimination either way, that we don't give jobs to other people, you know, just because they're new and from a different country, and we have some kind of altruistic feeling towards them, and not take care of people who are already here. I think we, you know, equality should be the practice.
In other words, we should help all people.
Right. I mean, if they become citizens, they want to be absorbed into this country, then they should be treated just like I am.
Tim, I asked a lady from Denver a few minutes ago a question, and she answered it one way. I want to ask you the same question. What if a communist family needed some help? Would you be willing to give that help?
I think so.
You mean you wouldn't draw a line then?
No, I mean, they're human beings after all, and perhaps by my treating them in a good way, I might be able to persuade them to come over to what I think is the more proper political philosophy.
I see.
And if I treat them with hostility and I ignore them, well, I mean, it's going to be similar to, I think, what's going on in China right now. We treat them with hostility and they, you know, act in a similar way back to us. But if I show them love and I show them generosity and kindness and you know, politics later, I think we might be able to be more successful.
Mr. Sick, what do you think about that, about Tim's last statement? Do you agree with it or not?
Well, he mentioned something in connection with being humanitarian, helping people, as I mentioned before, after the refugees are cleared by what we consider to be perhaps ample clearance for immigration and the State Department and so forth. Perhaps there are people that may be in the category of Tim mentioned that have been persuaded already. The only concern that I have is, of course, militant communism, for example, is in part of a previous person speaking a while ago, the organization or international communism is not seeking, I don't think, brotherly love with the West. And if a person is definitely militant, it would be hard to offer. For example, during the storms that have ravaged Cuba, this country, through the Red Cross, offered to go in there and help, and this was denied. Now, on an individual basis, when the person, perhaps the communist, may be wavering, and we have had people here not only that have wavered, but they have changed, then we can help them. But I don't think they're too eager to accept help, let's say, on a mass scale, if we were to go out to a communist country and aid, unless they, let's say, do the distribution and get the credit themselves and no credit goes to the other side. I mean, we can get quite involved in this, but a mass help, for example, to these systems and through their system has been impossible.
Well, the question really didn't concern mass help. It really concerned
the individual.
The individual family. And
yeah, if this would be possible, for example, if American people, let's say, could go into Soviet Russia, and my own background, I have relatives there that we are helping now. And I can't say that I wouldn't help a communist because perhaps some of my relatives are handing over a portion of the things that we've been doing for our relatives through the years. And I don't object to this on an individual basis, you see. But Americans, for example, are not allowed to enter and to go into any communist regime. And on an individual personal basis, let's say, I'm your American brother. And I would like to share this piece of bread with you. We are not allowed to do this.
By the communists.
That's right.
Our government would allow us.
Sure. I think part of the problem that you've partly pointed out is that there's a whole range of, you know, what it means to be a communist. Some people say that to be a communist is to emphasize a policy of economic collectivism. And it goes all the way to the point of where the person is a militant and is actively engaged in some type of revolutionary activity. Now, if he just believes in economic collectivism and he doesn't really wish to overthrow our government, I don't see what the objection would be in helping the particular person.
You would have no fear.
To overthrow the government, clearly, I think we should treat him with some suspicion.
Tim, basically, though, you would have no fear of having a Cuban refugee family come and live with your family, that he might be a spy or something to this effect, would you?
No, I don't think I have anything to...
No, but I wouldn't either.
I don't think, furthermore, that I will be persuaded by anything that he does, and I don't think that he would be foolish enough to use my house as a basis for some kind of revolutionary activity.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's going to assassinate my wife and myself in our sleep, you know.
You have some faith in human nature then, Tim.
I do, and I think that's the only way we can play the ball game in the world today.
Tim, I want to thank you for calling Night Call.
Thank you, sir.
Good night, sir. Mr. Tim Hotstatter, a gentleman from Indianapolis, Indiana, listening on WFBM. Our guest tonight is Mr. Michael Sick, and he is a gentleman who is working with Cuban refugees. Our topic, what can I do to help Cuban refugees? You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Busy America! Busy America! Busy making money! Busy buying gadgets, busy keeping up with you-know-who.
Is that your idea of fulfillment?
Don't you wonder if there's more to life than just that rat race with no finish line? Where'd you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by your Council of Churches. This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
Hello again, Night People. Our guest tonight is Mr. Michael Sick, and Mike is a man who has devoted the last 5 years of his life to working with Cuban refugees, first in Chicago, and now in Miami. Our topic tonight on NYCAL, what can I do to help Cuban refugees? And if you'd like to express your opinion or ask a question of Mr. Sick, give us a call here at NYCAL. Now, our number is area code 313-846-6601. And remember, gentle people, you may call from anywhere collect. You may reverse the charges. Now, please make that call station to station. Our NYCAL number is area code 313-846-6601. And Mr. Sick, I have a caller standing by in Indianapolis, Indiana, a listener on WFBM, Mr. John Guilfoy. Good evening, Mr. Guilfoy. Your comment, please. Yes, sir.
Number one is, what is the difference between Russian communism and Cuban communism?
All right, let's take that first question.
How do you get that question?
John wants to know, what's the difference between Russian communism and Cuban communism?
I think that what I have experienced so far in talking to these people and, of course, reading, as I said before, in the press that has covered more here in the Miami area than elsewhere in the country as to some of the things that have been going on, and talking to a number of people, especially counting on the experiences of those people that I knew from childhood back in Cuba. And that is that at this time, as it has been the experience of any people that have suffered the takeover of a communist regime, the first initial steps of this takeover are more severe than later. I think that that in Russia, a number of things have been relaxed. For example, in the past few days, we have heard that a number of Protestant ministers have been called up for duty in the armed services, and more there's the station or places where the Protestant churches have been preaching have been terminated or closed. And on the other hand, I hear from friends that have traveled in the Soviet Union in the rural areas, small groups assembly and so forth for these services, more or less overlooked by the local authorities.
In other words, you're saying they're having more religious freedom in communist Russia today.
It seems that way, and it doesn't seem to be this in Cuba. However, I think that the way we could follow this is this, that in any takeover, the first steps of any communist takeover first are followed by driving into exile the upper class, middle class, in fact, any opposition, driving either into exile, imprisoning, or doing away with these people one way or another. Therefore, in these initial steps, and this is what has been going on in Cuba, the regime is always more and more severe because it has a larger number of persons opposing it. In later years, either the people have subdued, and even though they may not have changed their minds, but they lose perhaps the hope of doing something to overthrow the regime. And they have an opportunity to do their own work without being hampered by opposition. Since, as I said before, in large numbers, the opposition, which is quite militant, suffers through these stages.
John, you had another question.
Yeah, that's the first question related to the second one. Is why, if they erect a wall in Berlin and East Berlin and shoot women and children and everybody else from coming across, just trying to get out, why are they letting them come out of Cuba? Why don't they set up something down here like that? Why, if it's the same brand of communism, why the difference?
Well, Mike is asking...
I couldn't hear the question.
John is asking this question, Mike, to this effect. Why do they put a wall in Berlin and not allow their people to become refugees, whereas in Cuba, they're actually assisting the people to leave their country? Now, why this difference in communism?
Yes, well, for one of the things that some of the refugees, and here we can go back perhaps to the experiences of some of the people that have come out recently and some of their ideas that I would like to bring up first. As I said before, Castro is not through yet with the goodly percentage of his opposition. And I think he would like to see them get out. And in this way, actually, he's being aided in getting actually rid of the people that bother him, that he would have to do something about, and that he would have to watch, for one thing, perhaps in East Germany, let's say, the stages have already taken place. Then another phase of the situation, economically, Cuba is suffering a great deal in the lack of foodstuffs and on down the line, and having less mouths to feed would actually help the situation there. I would say, in general, this would be part of my opinion.
John, you had any other questions?
No, Russ, I think that does it. I enjoy your show very
much. You're very kind. Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Good night, sir. A gentleman from Indianapolis, Indiana, listening on WFBM. Mike, I want to ask you a question on this point. By these people all coming from Cuba, aren't we, in a sense, defeating our own purpose if we ever want a free Cuba? In other words, a Cuba that's sympathetic to American foreign aid.
Yes.
Shouldn't we really insist that these people stay in Cuba and fight the good fight there?
Yeah. Well, this, of course, has been discussed a number of times, even by the Cubans themselves. A number of the Cuban leaders that are here now said if we would have all stayed to the last one, probably something would have happened by now with this large number of people and leaders and so forth. This is what a number of people even in other countries say, for example, Spain, that suffered a revolution and a possible communist takeover back some years ago. And some of the Spaniards, I was talking to a Spaniard the other day that works with us in Spain, and the Cubans that come to the United States via Spain. This certainly is a good point. Then, on the other hand, it's rather hard, for example, for me to say, for any one of us here to say, you should have stayed in Cuba and fought the good fight. It's difficult, for example, for a father when he realizes the problem of the infiltrating of the communist system into his home life, into the life of his children, and the indoctrination into the system, to say, you stay there, fight the good fight when they take your children away. And perhaps they have started by saying, well, no, we don't say your children cannot go to Sunday school, but at the same hour, for example, or your whatever religious training or other training you might want them to go through, but at 10 o'clock, which is the same hour that the Sunday school would meet, it's imperative that he be attending the meeting of the Young Pioneers, let's say, an organization.
So they frustrate the aims of the parents.
And this is hard. As I've talked to parents and I've talked to scores of people, it's really hard when you analyze it on an individual basis to ask a father, head of a family, to make this decision. And if there is a plan, perhaps people would be willing to stay, but in the initial stages, the Cuban situation, the Cubans were so frustrated with the fact that the takeover was not exactly swift, but they were frustrated in the fact that they were expecting one thing to happen, and something else happened. The least thing that the Cuban people expected was the kind of revolution that the communists are claiming they brought about, and that is a social revolution. This is not what took place at all, actually, when the Cuban people were opposing the Batista. Batista regime. But what they wanted is a change in leadership and the corruption that had existed then and had existed before, and they rebelled. And they overthrew a number of governments when the president of a country to assume the powers that were not given to him by the Cuban Constitution. And this was one more instance, and in this instance, perhaps even more so, because more Cubans were aware of the fact that they wanted this change, and Castro promised the very thing that they had been yearning for generations.
But did not deliver then.
Did not deliver.
Mike, we have a caller standing by in Baltimore, Maryland, a listener on WBAL, Mr. Max J. Wilburn. Good evening, Max. Speak right up, sir. You're on night call.
Yes, Mr. Gibb.
Yes, sir. Your comment.
I really enjoy your show. It's very interesting every night.
You're very kind, sir.
But you're talking about the Cuban refugees?
Yes, sir.
And I say that, well, this is America, the country where anybody can come here and everybody has a fair chance, no matter against whatever country you're from or whatever your religion you are. Everybody has a fair chance for everything.
So you...
I say that no matter where you're from, Cuba... Russia, England, you have a fair chance, just like us American citizens. We were born here.
So you have no objection, then, Max, to allowing
Cuban dip? No, we're a country that is, well, predominantly wealthy, and we, you know, help everybody.
Mr. Sick, do you find that this is the expression of belief in America that Max expressed is the majority opinion in the United States?
Yes, by all means. For example, when the initial offer by our president hit the press, shall we say, across the country, we were flooded with offers of jobs. For example, we have a new list of jobs, job openings, as they read of the type of refugees and so forth that are coming in, streaming into our offices here in Miami, and we coordinate this and we do something about them. Working in this program as director of Churchill Service, the Protestant agent, this is likely true of the others. We in our organization we have more sponsors. This means local churches. We work through local churches. Then we have had refugees so far to fill them.
And so actually America is responding.
I think that when the president says that the person seeking refuge in this country will find it, definitely seems to be the feeling of most Americans.
Well, Mr. Wilburn, we're just about finished with our talk tonight on Night Call, and I want to thank you for calling.
Okay, well, thanks for having the chance to let me call. It's very, like I said, a very interesting show. There'll be more shows like this.
Thank you, sir. Good night. Mr. Max J. Wilburn, a gentleman listening on WBAL, who believes that America is big enough to take the refugees.
Our guest tonight, Mr. Michael Sick. And, Mr. Sick, I want to thank you for being our guest. We've enjoyed having you here on Night Call, and we really appreciate you taking the time to express your opinion and share with us your knowledge on the Cuban refugee situation.
Night Call is produced by the Methodist Church in cooperation with the National Council of Churches and this radio station as a radio forum dedicated to the frank discussion of vital issues of daily life. Night Call encourages its participants to express freely and responsibly their own personal opinions.